righteous as the Tea Party crusaders of the modern era. Usurpers, liberals, Jews, and communists in those days, gays, Muslims, and undocumented immigrants today, had stolen their country, and the self-appointed guardians of American values were determined to claw it back. For many Americans, communism posed an existential threat even more alarming than that posed by Islamic extremists in the modern era. Communists, after all, could be anyone. Neighbors, relatives, close friends. They looked and sounded exactly like us, yet they were agents of a ruthless foreign power whose declared goal was to destroy the American way of life. They were the enemy within, the masters of deceit, in J. Edgar Hoover's chilling characterization. "What is a communist?" asked Carl Barslag, staff member of the National Americanism Commission of the American Legion in 1948. "A communist is a completely transformed, unrecognizable, and dedicated man. While he may retain the physical characteristics of the rest of us as far as natural functions are concerned, his mental and psychic processes might as well be from another planet. A communist is completely emancipated from all moral inhibitions and is therefore above law, ethics, or morality." It was not just the far right that spoke of communists as if they were brainwashed zombies. J. Howard McGrath, Attorney General under President Truman, said each Communist Party member carries in himself the germ of death for our society. Adlai Stevenson called communism worse than cancer, tuberculosis, and heart disease combined. Although exaggerated, these fears were not groundless. The Soviet Union under Joseph Stalin was one of history's most brutal dictatorships, responsible for killing or imprisoning millions. The American Communist Party was a secret political organization that faithfully honored directives from Moscow as if they were commandments, and many members defended the regime even after its crimes were exposed and documented. But most American communists saw themselves as responding to the inequities and deprivation of the Great Depression by working to create a fairer and more egalitarian society through peaceful means, not violent revolution. Still, when faced with what they perceived to be an existential threat to their security, Western democracies have often responded by repressing human rights with alarming energy and self-righteous rhetoric, and the early 1950s was no exception. A powerful coalition of investigative agencies, legislative panels, citizens' groups, private corporations, and influential journalists banded together to expose and root out the evils of communism, its true believers, and fellow travelers. In truth, Hollywood was a mere sideshow in the larger struggle. No atomic secrets were sold or stolen in Beverly Hills. No acts of sabotage or espionage were alleged to have taken place. No large amounts of people or money were involved. But the symbolic power of Hollywood, its extraordinary high profile, and its abiding role in our national culture and fantasies made it an irresistible battleground. The very features that drew the leaders of the American Communist Party to set up shop in Hollywood in the 1930s attracted its antagonists a decade later to come hunt them down. The House Committee on Un-American Activities, acronym HUAC, was at the vanguard of this crusade. Created a decade earlier, HUAC first held public hearings into alleged communist infiltration of the motion picture industry in 1947. The sessions had ended in stalemate. 11 current or former Communist Party members had been called to the stand, 10 of whom cited the First Amendment in refusing to answer questions about their political affiliations and were charged with contempt of Congress. Civil libertarians condemned the committee's methods and actions. Even Hollywood's studio heads briefly resisted congressional repression, but ultimately purged the Hollywood Ten from their ranks. 4 years later, when the committee returned for a second set of hearings, it faced no meaningful opposition as it issued salmon-pink subpoenas to dozens of actors, screenwriters, and other film workers. One of those called to testify was